Zigzag in One, a place where we honestly discuss how to navigate the zigs and zags in our crazy lives. Expect heartwarming stories, some laughter, and maybe a few tears as we embrace life's challenges and choose joy over a momentary defeat. Today, we will hear from someone whose life has had some unexpected turns, but chose to keep moving forward. What did they learn? Some valuable life lessons. Zigs and zags are also a part of our host, Melanie Brown's journey. She too had to find the determination to never give up. What are we waiting for? Let's dive in.
Welcome to the Zigzag in One podcast. I'm your host, Melanie Brown. When I interview guests on the show, the zigzags they faced are difficult to hear, but they do give context for the powerful part of their stories about how they kept moving forward and the beautiful things that make up their lives now. My guest today, Tomiko Pugh, is a survivor of domestic violence. Fair warning, it's difficult to hear the suffering she endured, but she shares how God was preparing her for something greater. He was pushing her into her purpose. Those years of violence led Tomiko to becoming an author and podcaster and founder of a nonprofit that focuses on domestic violence advocacy, awareness, and prevention. She's also a life and business coach. You will hear her energy and passion for empowering women to live fully and enjoy success in their life pursuits. She and her husband, Kenny, have been married for 6 years. Her son and daughter may be adults, but they will always be her babies. She enjoys teaching Zumba classes and promises that she will break out in a dance move at any given moment. I'm eager for you to hear my conversation with Tomiko Pugh. In my intro, I shared a little bit about my guest for today, but before I say hello to her, I want to say this. Tomiko Pugh is a powerful overcomer who has not only turned her pain into purpose, but she walks the walk. And what I mean by that is she helps those who have or are facing domestic abuse. And she also empowers women to create transformational businesses of their own. Welcome to the show, Tomiko.
Hey, Melanie. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here with you.
Well, let's just jump in, girl, because you've got a story that we need to unpack.
Absolutely. Let's do it.
So I read that you were born to teenage parents in a poverty-stricken neighborhood in New York. That had to have shaped you from a very young age. Tell me about that.
Yeah, you know, it did. The things that we go through in life definitely do shape us. So growing up in a poverty-stricken neighborhood, being born to teenage parents who, by the way, both were addicted to drugs, crack cocaine at that time, was not a fun experience. I remember being made fun of because people knew that my parents were addicted to drugs. And so one of the things for me growing up, I wanted to make sure that that was something I never touched. Like, I've always been afraid of any type of drug. You know what I mean? I might have a glass of wine now and then, but no drugs. So it did shape me in that way, but it also shaped me in a way to be more compassionate towards other people that I encounter. People often say to me, how did you get, I would love to do the work you do. I would love to be where you are. And I'm like, well, in order to get to where I am, I had to go through some things, right? So I had to experience adversities. And that was one of those adversities or one of those things that shaped me to be the person I am today.
Well, and I do think that the things that we go through are definitely opportunities to shape us. And some people, unfortunately, wallow in those struggles and live in defeat. But what I love about your story is the things that you have gone through as a young person, but also what we're about to get to, shaped you in a way that you said, I'm concerned about what this has done to me as a person. I want to make sure that I get the healing that I need. But then you allow that pain, those struggles that you went through, to then become the purpose that you have for your life. And as I said in the intro, you are walking the walk, girl. And I love the fact that your struggles didn't stop you, because if they had, all the people that you are impacting wouldn't have had the opportunity to learn from your story and then also to join with you. I want us to talk about
how your family was composed of people who struggled with abuse and drugs and alcoholism. Again, that's part of what shaped you. So talk about that for a moment.
Yeah, it is part of what shaped me. And so even if as I said earlier, it allowed me to be more understanding towards people, to be more compassionate. But before I even knew how to be compassionate and to be understanding, there was a little bit of embarrassment for me because, again, people knew and they would judge us, right? They would judge our family because of what they would see. And so I was teased a lot growing up, didn't have the best designer clothing and things of that nature. So I was teased a lot. But I think it made me tough.
Yes.
It made me a very strong-willed person. When I see other people in that same struggle, I can identify with them and it makes me relatable. And so when I share my story, because people often say, how do you get people to want to support what you're doing? Or how do you even get, you know, even having the business that I have today, how do you attract people to you? And I'm like, it's just that I'm transparent is my story. People know that I've gone through something. Not growing up with that silver spoon in my mouth, being able to having to work for everything that I had, it makes you actually appreciate it a little bit more.
Yes, it does. Absolutely. Yeah. So part of your story is that you experienced abuse at a young age and you weren't aware of it at the time. As you went through the different struggles that you went through, looking back, you realized that that teenage relationship that you had with a young man was actually abuse. Tell me about that.
Yeah, it was. And I didn't look at it that way because, again, I didn't have a positive example of what a healthy relationship looked like, at least not in my immediate household. Because my grandparents had an amazing marriage, but in my immediate household, in the neighborhood that I lived in, it just wasn't presented that way. So yeah, he was like the high school basketball player, the high school jock, played football and was kind of pegged to go into the NFL, went to college on a full scholarship for football. And I was his girlfriend and I got to walk around the school with his jersey on and, you know, his gold necklace and all that good stuff. So I thought I'm like, hey, this is the life right here. He had a little bit more, his family had financially were better off than we were. And so he would take care of me and buy me the things my parents couldn't buy me. But he also used that as a form of control. Mm-hmm. To control me and force me to stay with him and do things that I really didn't want to do. But I thought that it was okay because he was taking care of me. And so I didn't realize that the way he spoke to me, he would squeeze my hand tightly every now and then just to let me know he was in control. I didn't look at that as abuse. I just thought, oh, you know, back then they would call it, oh, it's just love taps. Oh, that's how boys do. They don't really know. But it was actually a form of abuse. I mean, there were times when he would threaten me, you better not leave me or I'm going to do this or do that. You know, it goes beyond the physical, goes, you know, it's the emotional and the way a person speaks to you. So if a person can actually look at you a certain way or say something to you that instills fear in you, then that is a form of abuse. And I didn't know that at the time.
Back then with teenagers, as you mentioned, it's just a love pat or whatever. There wasn't talk about abuse of any kind for teenage boys or girls. There just wasn't talked about. And so, of course, you didn't understand that until you looked back and then you realized. So, but by outward appearances, your friends probably thought, oh, she's living the life.
Right. They did think that. Yes.
All of that went into your book called Wounds to Wisdom. What else was included in that book?
Yeah. So Wounds to Wisdom, I wrote that book because I really wanted to journal the abusive relationship that I was in as an adult, the abusive marriage that I was in, and how I was able to turn those wounds into wisdom and grow wise from them and learn lessons. But in order to do that, I had to go all the way back to the beginning. So in the book, I go all the way back to the beginning, to my childhood, to some of the relationships I had growing up, and then journaling every romantic or intimate relationship that I ever had. And the one thing, Melanie, that stood out is that, and this is the way that I put it, same guy, different face. And what I mean by that is same personality, same controlling personality, possessive, all of those things. So same guy, different face. And I think what I was looking for, I wrote a chapter that's called Daddy's Girl. That was missing in my life. And so I think I was looking for that father figure, or that person to really emotionally take care of me like a father would.
Yes. And so you mentioned that it also included part of a marriage. Tell me about when you got married to that man and then what it looked like, because I'm sure that there was a period of time when there wasn't an abusive type behaviors.
Yeah. So, you know, you don't go into the relationship with them, you know, slapping you around and yelling at you immediately. It always starts off great. He was a very handsome guy, great smile, very charming, worked for a Fortune 500 company where he was a high level executive. Our dating time was great. And one of the things I remember him saying to me was, I feel like I was put on this earth to take care of you. Like, I don't want you to have to work. He proposed in less than a year. We were married very quickly. And very quickly, things turned around and turned very controlling. And what people don't understand is there are small signs that we don't even look at. So, for example, when he said I didn't have to work and I could be a stay-at-home mom, that was very appealing to me. Like, I thought I hit the jackpot. Like, hey, I get to stay home. And that was my dream growing up. Like, you know, when you're little, you think Prince Charming and all I got to do is cook a little bit and clean. And well, it wasn't that, right? I didn't have finances. I didn't have a job because he's like, you can stay home. So I didn't have my own money and income. And so when he started to emotionally and verbally abuse me, every time I wanted to leave, I'm like, well, I don't have any money to leave. Where am I going to go? Am I going to go with my kids and go to a shelter where there's strangers? So, you know, those are the things that come into consideration. And so before he ever was physically abusive to me, the financial abuse, the emotional and verbal abuse, the spiritual abuse, it had me completely broken.
Tell me about the financial abuse that you're referring to, the fact that you didn't have your own money. And therefore, yeah. I'm guessing that he kind of controlled the money that you did have.
Yes. Yeah. So let me kind of go back to that. So the financial abuse. Yes. Yeah, so meaning that I didn't have control of the finances. He controlled the finances. I didn't have my own money. He had to give me an allowance to buy groceries and do things for the house and buy clothing for me and the kids. So things like that. I had to ask for money. Hey, I need a few dollars. The kids have this coming up in school. So I didn't have my own money. The bank card that I did have, I wasn't even on the accounts back then. So yeah.
So you also mentioned spiritual abuse. Mm-hmm. I'm very interested to hear what you mean by that.
So when I say spiritual abuse, I mean using scriptures in the Bible as a form of, as a way to control me and the things that I did, or to justify the way that he treated me because I should submit to him as my husband. And he knew the word. He knew the Bible back from the back to the front. And he would use those scriptures as a way to get me to be more submissive because he knew that I loved God. He didn't go to church though. I did. And so, you know, there were times where, and he would get upset. He would think that I spent too much time at church and he would be like, you don't need to go to that church. You're spending too much time there. So on Sunday morning, some Sunday mornings, I would literally go to the grocery store, tell him I'm going to the grocery store, stop at church, sit in the back of the church and listen to the word and then go to the grocery store and go home. Like that was my way of getting the word in. So that's what I mean when I say spiritual abuse, you know, keeping you from that, your faith, the thing that's going to really, you know, where I drew my strength from.
Right. So, and it's so interesting that you're talking about this because so often people think of abuse and we put it in a box. It looks like this. It feels like this. It sounds like this, but you're sharing how it permeates into every area of your life. And that's
incredible
for somebody like me to hear, because I would have put it in a box in the past, but
yeah. And people do that. And they often think there's alcoholism. He didn't even drink. He just had this thing where he was just very controlling. You know, he controlled everything. He treated our household the way that he managed our household, the way he managed his employees at his Fortune 500 company.
Wow.
So we were managed that way.
So how many years were you married to him before things fell apart?
Well, things progressively started to fall apart probably immediately after the wedding. But it got progressively worse over the course of the next 3 to 4 years. And what I was going to say before was before he ever even got physical with me, I was already broken. My self-esteem was low. My self-confidence was low. I was just completely broken. And I often tell people, you know, you can heal from a broken arm. Oftentimes, we break bones, they get stronger. but how do you heal a broken soul or a broken spirit? And so I was spiritually broken before he ever hit me. And so by the time he started to push me around or shove me, I thought that I deserved it at that point. And so I was always scrambling to think, what could I do better to make him love me more? That's all I wanted. That's all I wanted. And there were times where he would strangle me until I was unconscious. He did that a lot. There were times when he had a gun. He, you know, had a license to carry, but he let me know that gun was there and he had it under the pillow and he would pull it out and clean it in front of me, like wiping it off. Like, yeah, I have this gun. And so I was very fearful. The day that I tried to leave him was the day that the abuse got the worst. You know, whenever you tell a person, an abuser, that you're leaving, that's when they feel like they've lost control. That's when the abuse either gets the worst or that's when you see those homicides happen. And so I will say this, if you're in a domestic violence relationship, do not tell your abuser, I'm leaving. You need to put together a survivor safety plan and plan it out. Otherwise, you're risking your life. And if you have children, you're risking theirs too. So the day that I left, we were driving up Interstate 85 in Atlanta near the airport. I was in the driver's seat. And that's the day I told him, I said, I'm tired and I'm leaving you. Mm. And he called me the B word and said, B, if you leave me, I will kill both of us. He proceeded to take the steering wheel. I guess he was trying to force us in an accident. And we ended up on the side of the road and he beat me and strangled me until I was unconscious. When I came back to consciousness, I was literally in the middle of Interstate 85 with cars swerving around me, blowing their horns, trying to prevent from hitting me. And as I stood up, there was a lady. She said, ma'am, my husband and I saw everything. The police are on the way. They had pulled over because they saw what happened and the police came. He was arrested. And then that was the day that my journey of survivorship started.
Well, God was certainly with you.
He was with me.
Hearing you talk about what he did to you with trying to run the car off the road, that could have been a disastrous accident that could have killed you and him or somebody else as well, but also him strangling you. So there was so much violence that day, but yet you survived. And to me, that speaks of God being there with you.
Yes, he was there with me. I'm so grateful.
And so tell me how things progressed from there.
Yeah. So from there, of course, there was a struggle, you know, pulling everything together and trying to really just start my life over outside of that marriage. I left a 7-bedroom home because I didn't want to fight. I was tired of going to court fighting and saying, I want the house. And I was like, you know what? You can have the house. I just want my freedom and my peace. I don't want anything. I don't want anything from you. So I left a 7-bedroom home, moved to a 1-bedroom apartment with me and my 2 children where we slept on the floor. And Melanie, when I tell you that first night in that 1-bedroom apartment, laying on that air mattress was the most peace that we had had in over 4 or 5 years.
I bet.
Oh my gosh. That was the most peace that we had ever had. And I carry that with me every day of my life. If it doesn't bring me peace, then it's not for me, because God is not the author of confusion, but of peace and a sound mind. And if it doesn't bring me peace, it is not of God. If it doesn't bring you peace, it's not him. It's not God. It can't be. You know, he doesn't bring confusion, right? He's not the author of confusion. So just kind of keep that in mind.
Yes. Part of what you have on your website, and this phrase jumped out at me, is you believe in turning your pain into purpose. What do you mean by that?
Yes, yes. So, oh my gosh, it doesn't matter what you go through in life. We've all been through some stuff. And those adversities, those trials and tribulations that we experience, they're really preparing us for something greater. We don't know it while we're in it, but God is preparing us for something greater and really just pushing us into our purpose. And I didn't know that at the time. I didn't know that that experience would give me the opportunity to be able to, and I call it ministry because it's ministry, to minister to other women who are coming out of those types of relationships, domestic violence. Maybe they've gone through some form of, you know, sexual abuse or something, because the trauma is very similar. And so it's very easy for me to relate to people who are going through trauma. I can recognize it. I can literally be in a grocery store and look a person in the eye and tell that she's going through some form of trauma.
And that is incredible. And that is part of your purpose and passion that you feel was birthed as a result of the pain that you went through. So let's talk about how you've turned that pain into purpose. You are the founder of a nonprofit called the Still Standing Alliance. Tell me what you do in that nonprofit to help women who have faced or are facing domestic violence.
So the Still Standing Alliance, we are a nonprofit organization. We focus on domestic violence advocacy, awareness, and prevention. Our signature program is our Survivor Empowerment Program, where we actually help domestic violence survivors to rebuild their lives after abuse. And so we offer different programs like financial empowerment. We have a healing curriculum. So things of that nature to help them to really get back into the swing of things so they don't feel alone, right? So they know that there is a community of like-minded individuals out there with them. And then they also have that support system, because I didn't have it when
right.
I was
and
going
someone
through
who's been there, done that, and mm-hmm. who has survived and is now living a very purposeful life.
Yes, ma'am. Yes.
Yes. So I absolutely love that. But that's not the only thing that this strong woman is doing. I want to hear about your coaching company and your business academy. What do you do to help empower women through that?
Yes. So Living the Empowered Life Academy, it's specifically for women who have inspirational stories of overcoming life's adversities. And I teach them how to use that experience or their story or whatever expertise they have to create a business. And I like to call them transformational businesses, because they're purposeful businesses. Because again, those adversities and those things that we go through, they're meant, you know, to push us into our purpose. So to kind of pull out that experience and add your expertise to that. How do we help you to create a business? Can you become a life coach and coach other women through that? Can you write a book and become an author? Maybe you want to be a motivational speaker and speak your story. They're transformational businesses. Maybe they've gone to school to become a counselor. That's also a transformational business where they can use their experience to help other people. And so that's what I mean when I say transformational. So here's my motto: make money and make a difference. So I believe that, you know, we all have these gifts, these talents, these experiences. We are called to make a difference in the world.
Yes,
but we can make income off of it too. So it's make money, but you also need to make a difference. So I interview everyone just to make sure their intention is right before they come into the academy.
Just going through your website, and I want to make sure that the listeners hear what your website is, but going through your website, you have all kinds of resources there, and you have a blog and you have a podcast. You offer so many different packages for the coaching. And I just am impressed with the fact that what you have gone through didn't destroy you. Oh, not at all. It totally, as you say, empowered you to live a life of purpose. And I am so honored to have spent time with you today, because I feel like there are women out there, and men too, but have been facing struggles, especially during these pandemic times. As you said, there is so much that we can learn during those times of zigzags, since the podcast is called Zigzag in One.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I love what you're doing, Tomiko. And I hope that the women who are listening will at least go to your website and see what you have to offer. And then if you are in a place where you are wanting to make moves toward making a difference or starting a business or any of the things that Tomiko listed a minute ago, that you reach out to her, because what she's offering is incredible. It is faith-based. It is empowering you to become a powerful woman in our society. So with all that said, if you could give your website address.
Yes. So my website address is TamikoLowry.com, TamikoLowry.com. The nonprofit is the stillstandingalliance.org. And both of those, Tomiko Lowry Pugh on all social media outlets, and then the Still Standing Alliance on all social media outlets.
Well, if we could, I hate to end because I've enjoyed our conversation so much.
I do too.
You've enlightened me, and I hope the listeners as well, as to the multifaceted abuse, domestic violence, because we need to be aware of that for our own situations. But I feel like we also need to be aware, as you said, for other women. And we may not ever have that special skill of being able to see it like you do. But if we see those red flags, we need to be aware so that we can help our friends who might be in those situations.
Absolutely. I agree. And thank you so much for having me. I really, really enjoyed our conversation.
So let's talk about your one takeaway, because I think that would be a powerful place for us to end today.
Yeah. So my one takeaway, the one thing that I want everyone to understand, and we've talked about this throughout our conversation, is that those adversities that you experience in life, it doesn't matter what it is, they're meant to prepare and push you into your purpose. And think about Romans 8:28. All things work together for the good of them that love the Lord, who are called according to his purpose. All things work together, not just the good things or the things that we want to pick out, the good, the bad, and the ugly. All things work together, and they're meant to push and to prepare you for your purpose.
It has been such a joy to spend time with you today. Thank you so much, Tomiko.
Thank you so much for having me.
Wow, Tomiko's story isn't a rags to riches story. Instead, it's a broken to empowered story. The zigzags she faced were beyond tough, but instead of living in defeat and abandoning her dreams, she allowed God to turn the pain into purpose, and then she pursued her dreams of empowering women. I encourage you to order a copy of Tomiko's book, Wounds to Wisdom, listen to her podcast, Living the Empowered Life, and visit her website, TomikoLowry.com. If you're looking for a nonprofit to support, the Still Standing Alliance is truly changing women's lives. Thank you for listening to today's episode. Please share it on your social media, and especially share it with anyone you know who has been or is currently in a violent relationship. Tomiko is eager to offer support and resources. I look forward to sharing another powerful interview on the next episode of the Zigzag in One podcast. Until then, keep moving forward.